I Hate the News is a weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. It's December 31st, 2024, New Year's Eve. In the news, some year-end things and some looking forward to 2025. The Maryland State Department of Assessments and Taxation announced this week that statewide residential and commercial property values rose 20% over the last 3 years. That's nearly 7% annually. Governor Westmore's Climate Action Subcabinet presented a progress report this month. We will look into that. Peter Gray of the Washington Area Bicyclist Association sums up the year for road safety. And Maryland Delegate Julie Palakovich Carr has an update on vehicle noise abatement. I also want to telescope to Friday's episode on January 3rd, when we will have Maryland House of Delegates Majority Leader David Moon and the Chair of the Environment and Transportation Committee, Mark Corman, talking about the fiscal precipice on which the state is now perched. I should say I'm just as nervous about the new year as the next person, but I hope that I Hate Politics continues to be a microcosm, no matter what happens nationally or internationally. You can connect with us most easily on social media, where we are at IHPpod, but also privately by email at producer@ihppod.org. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by the Political Science Program at UMBC Shady Grove, where you'll learn a strong foundation in public policy, pre-law, and international affairs for an impactful career in a number of essential areas. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now.
When I fall down, I will stay down.
Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band for the moment spanning red, blue, and purple states, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam LeGrone on bass and synths, Ben Heath, guitar and synths, and Montgomery County's very own Planning Board Commissioner, James Hedrick, on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and available on Bandcamp. Sting Pain Index. In June 2024, Maryland Governor Westmore issued an executive order requiring state agencies to make climate action plans and created a climate subcabinet led by the state's environment secretary to harness what he called the whole of government strategy on climate action. This month, December 2024, the Maryland Department of Environment released the plans from the 25 state agencies tasked by the order, and the subcabinet released its annual climate progress report. According to the report, Maryland cut carbon emission by 30% between 2006 and 2024, that is 2% annually, but the climate law that the state passed in 2022 requires a reduction of 60% of carbon emission by 2031. So in 18 years, the state got to 50% of the 2031 goal. And in the next 6 years, Maryland needs to cut emissions by 30% more. That is roughly 5% per year. A tall order by any measure. Maryland Republican leader Kathy Shalega has been calling the climate report a proposal for a $1 billion in new taxes. Unclear how Shalega arrived at that number, but the general financial distress in the state is palpable. In November, the Department of Legislative Services presented a dire picture to the state's Spending Affordability Committee. Here is budget analyst David Rumens.
But remember, this budget problem is not being driven by a recession. It's being driven by a somewhat stagnant economy and by our spending ambitions. By fiscal 2030, the final year of our forecast that we'll be presenting, we're showing the state only having enough revenue to cover 84% of the expenses that we're projecting the state to incur. That is the largest gap that we have seen in the last 20 years. It is a more significant gap than we saw during the Great Recession. So this is a significant challenge. It's the result of spending growth growing about 6% a year over the next 5 years, while revenues are projected to grow only 3% a year. And that reflects that we've been in a relatively stagnant period in terms of the Maryland economy. We're growing, but very, very slowly. We have not seen a lot of employment growth. We do have very low unemployment, but just not seeing much employment growth. And that's depressing our revenues a little bit. On the spending side, the General Assembly has made a number of commitments in recent years, most notably the K-12 enhancements, or known as the blueprint, that continue to be rolled out, and they drive a lot of the growth in costs throughout the next 5 years. We are also seeing, at the same time, growth in Medicaid. We've seen much higher than expected costs in Medicaid in the current year and in fiscal 24. We're also seeing a great deal of growth in demand for the state's child care subsidy program, which has grown at an enormous rate over the last couple of years. So all those additional spending pressures are leading to spending growing much faster than the revenues. And then you overlay that with the results of the election, which present concerns for Maryland's economy, as there's been much discussion about reductions in the federal workforce or relocation of federal agencies outside of the greater Washington region, which obviously would be harmful to the Maryland economy. And there's also the risk of some level of federal cutbacks in aid going to state and local governments, which again will present challenges to the state of Maryland. We take in about $19 billion of federal funding in our state budget each year.
If the central problem is spending ambition, then the other side of the coin is an inability to raise more revenue. The tension there is that any new tax will likely further suppress economic growth. The governor himself has been highly reticent on new taxes and has pinned his hopes on two sectors, housing and clean energy. That makes the Climate Action Plan report central to the governor's economic growth strategy. In the 2024 state budget, the governor had committed $17 million for 40 new electric school buses, $23 million for 400 EV chargers, and $50 million to help building electrification. These programs have not yet started, and in any case, they are relatively small. But given the spectacular collapse of the vendor who was supposed to deliver electric school buses to MCPS, Montgomery County Public Schools, timely supply of buses seems hard to imagine. If the Trump administration further imposes tariffs on imports, any school bus procurement plan is likely to take longer and cost more. According to the report from the Maryland Department of the Environment, the state has had greater success securing $615 million from the federal government under the Inflation Reduction Act and $12.96 billion under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. These monies are expected to go to solar generation, electric truck chargers, protecting forests along I-95 corridor, new clean energy equipment at the Port of Baltimore, home energy upgrade rebates, anti-flooding measures, particularly in Crisfield, Maryland. Additionally, the state has reconfigured its financial accounting systems to realize payments in lieu of clean energy tax credits, which of course government entities do not get. What remains a wild card is the likely antipathy of the Trump administration to an overwhelmingly Democratic state such as Maryland. Same thing can happen to the federal money for rebuilding the Francis Scott Key Bridge. The lame duck Congress did pass the continuing resolution to cover all the rebuild costs, but political uncertainties remain. and the Maryland Transportation Authority and Kiewit Infrastructure Company, the construction vendor, are putting shovels in the ground as soon as possible, beginning with the disassembly of the broken bridge as early as January 7th to reduce the possibility of a Trump retrenchment. Liz Farmer, a state finance expert with the Pew Charitable Trust, in her year-end Substack, argued that while Maryland has good mechanisms to predict the fiscal winds, it seems to be stuck. A rich state with poor finances. She doesn't compare Maryland with Japan in the 1990s, but it seems similar, but without the possibility of deficit financing. A morass of high tax, high debt, demographic decline, and poor business climate. When in fiscal trouble, fixed regulation is the usual mantra. But it seems a potential bill to enable the siting of new solar generation projects in the state, put together by the Maryland Association of Counties and the conservation group Forever Maryland, among others, has faltered. The state does not technically need a new law. The Public Service Commission could allow solar generation almost anywhere in the state based on current law. But a more cooperative approach that included the counties is likely not moving forward. On the housing front, there is likely to be a regulatory bill which sets county-level housing generation targets, and that is likely to pass, even if in some diluted form. The Maryland State Department of Assessments and Taxation, SDAT, announced this week that statewide property values, residential and commercial, rose by 20% over the last 3 years. Residential properties rose 21% and commercial properties rose 16.4%. SDAT's data comes from one of three groups into which all Maryland real property is divided for tax assessment purposes. That is, a third of all private property in the state is assessed for tax each year, and the increase comes from the group whose tax assessments for 2022 just went out. Since tax assessment groups divide property into three equal groups with statewide locational spread, it would mean that the aggregate assessment value for 2026 and 2027 will be similar. And so we can say that statewide property values have gone up by 20%. High assessments mean high revenues for the state's 23 counties and Baltimore City, which are the primary recipients of property tax revenue. This means that counties should have more money in their treasuries while the state finances look iffy. However, it is also the case that property values increase disproportionately in counties like Montgomery, Prince George's, and Frederick than in, say, Washington, Allegheny, and Garrett in Mountain, Maryland. Also notable is the 16.4% increase in the value of commercial property. A breakdown between multifamily residential, office, and retail properties would be useful, but not readily available at this time. In recent years, multifamily and office building owners have complained that properties are selling at lower prices than their face value. But why would their assessments increase if that were the case? We will follow up. Road safety is an often neglected part of infrastructure policymaking. I asked Peter Gray of the Washington Area Bicyclist Association for a 2024 update.
In 2024 in Montgomery County, there were 16 pedestrian deaths in car crashes and 48 serious injuries. The crash fatality numbers in Montgomery County have not changed much. Maybe it's a couple more than in 2023. In Prince George's County, the numbers are much worse. 34 crash deaths of pedestrians in 2024. And in Washington, D.C., the population numbers are smaller. So 18 pedestrian crash deaths in 2024 and two cyclists died in crashes in 2024. In Maryland overall, there were 440 crashes involving pedestrians and 128 with cyclists, but that number doesn't really tease out how many died, how many were seriously injured.
Given the numbers you mentioned, it seems that per capita-wise, Washington, D.C. is perhaps the worst affected.
I think that Prince George's County is in a worse state. The land use pattern in Prince George's County, there's less density. The speed limits are higher. The distance between pockets of residential housing to get from one point to another is more difficult. It's more hazardous. If you're at a metro station in Montgomery County, the odds of having some safe way of walking and biking to offices, doctor's offices, schools, you know, that kind of thing, downtown areas, is much higher than it's going to be safer.
What about the redesign they did of Route 1 in College Park? That seems to be pretty extensive.
Well, but still, most of it is unprotected.
Montgomery County has proclaimed Vision Zero, which is the idea that there should be no pedestrian and bike deaths whatsoever. But the numbers are holding steady, which means there is no progress.
Well, the Vision Zero plan has one measure is to provide safe routes to school, specific plans for the, I think it's 135 schools in the county. And yet the plan itself says that the goal is to do five of those plans a year. That's a 30-year arc of making it safe to walk and bike to school.
Peter Gray, here's to a better 2025.
Yes, I hope so.
Loud cars and what to do with them. Julie Balakovich Carr, the delegate from District 17 in Rockville, has been in pursuit for a few years to try to find a solution.
Many of us, especially since the pandemic, have been hearing a lot more disruptive sounds coming from vehicles with an illegally modified exhaust system or with a souped up engine. And I'll say I have heard like consistently for several years from residents around my district in Rockville and Gaithersburg about this issue. And thankfully, this last session, in the 2024 legislative session, we did pass legislation that authorized Montgomery and Prince George's counties to set up pilot programs to use an emerging technology called noise cameras to actually automatically detect these vehicles that are breaking the law and to send them first a warning and then a ticket for subsequent offenses. And here in Montgomery County, and actually more recently in Prince George's County, both county councils have passed ordinances to set up those pilot programs. So I think we're at a point now where in the not too distant future, we're actually going to start to see these cameras deployed in our area.
How do these cameras work?
So they are triggered by very loud sounds. And I'll say that the software behind the cameras are pretty sophisticated. So it's not just any loud sound. They specifically will recognize sounds from exhaust systems or car engines, but not be triggered by, say, like an airplane flying overhead or construction noise. And it, you know, detects that specific loud sound and snaps a photo of the license plate, just like a speed camera or a red light camera works. And then it's a similar review process where a person would actually have to review the ticket, make sure it's legit, and then the owner of the vehicle would get sent a citation.
It's like Shazam for vehicles.
Yeah.
Have these been deployed anywhere?
Yes. New York City is probably the largest program of noise cameras in the United States at this point. They started a few years ago with a pilot with just a single camera, and they really felt like they were getting good results with it. So they've been growing their program really rapidly. Their goal is actually to get to 100 cameras throughout the greater New York City area within just another year or two. But the cameras have been much more widely used in Europe, especially in the United Kingdom.
If you get a ticket, how much is the ticket? How can you contest it? Are there false positives?
So we built in a number of safeguards into the state law. First of all, that for someone's first offense, they have to be sent a warning. And it'll include language in that warning that they can go get their vehicle repaired. And in fact, you know, just in case this is something where the person didn't purposely alter their vehicle, something's wrong with their vehicle, if they go get their vehicle repaired, send proof of that back to the county then can waive the, you know, waive that ticket, that warning, or even a citation going forward. But if somebody, you know, has deliberately done this to their vehicle, deliberately modified their exhaust system and continue to flout the law, the tickets, I believe, are $75 per citation. That is capped in state law.
At one level, we allow the modification of exhausts.
We actually don't. That is also illegal under state law.
Okay, tell me about it.
Yes. So Maryland, and in fact, most states for, I think, several decades have said it is illegal both to modify the exhaust on a car and to operate a car with a modified exhaust. So that has been the state of the law. The tricky bit really has been enforcement of that existing law. It is, you know, really difficult because basically you need to have people who are out there with sound meters, and that is just not in the technology kit for most police officers. So this is just much clearer. We set a very clear threshold, a fairly loud decibel level. I believe it's 85 decibels. And so if your vehicle is exhaust system or engine is exceeding 85 decibels, that's the threshold. It's very, you know, clear cut in terms of enforcing that or not.
When will the pilot cameras deploy in Prince George's and Montgomery?
So with both jurisdictions having passed the ordinances, they have to go through the process of actually selecting a vendor, so the whole procurement process. And then additionally, for all the locations that cameras are going to be proposed for, there is a public notification and public hearing process, just like with speed cameras. So I think those steps are being taken now. My guess would be in 2025, I'm hoping the spring of 2025, although I can't speak for the county, that we'll actually see the first of these cameras out there.
There has been some concern about red light cameras, about school bus cameras, that, you know, is backed by somebody like Majority Leader David Moon, who has said that they are disproportionately issued at certain points and they are, discriminatory in the way that they are issued. Are you at all concerned about that?
For this legislation, I'm not. And I'll say the school bus cameras, I think, are really in a league of their own because the potential fine on those cameras is significantly, significantly higher. I think it's something like $500 per citation. And in the case of the school bus cameras, Majority Leader Moon has made a very, you know, compelling case over the years about the way we set that program up and how those cameras, basically, when they can ticket, has a lot to do with the road that you're driving on, which is not something a driver can control. It's largely a driver education issue, and we do not find many repeat offenders with the school bus cameras. I think with the noise cameras, because the ticket amount is so much lower, and the fact that, you know, nearly everybody who's probably going to get these tickets deliberately modified their car, they've made a choice to break the law. It's apples to oranges.
Okay, so I go to modify my car, my exhaust, right? And I'm obviously doing something illegal, you said. Who is going to be prosecuted then? Where is that going to be enforced?
Well, with the cameras, we're enforcing it on the owner of the vehicle, which
right,
is how.
But with the modification itself.
With the modification itself. Well, I'll say this is, I think, a parallel track that we should be looking at too. And I've had some people raise this issue of why aren't we, you know, doing enforcement with the mechanics, basically, who are making these modifications. And I think that's a legitimate approach, too. I don't think one precludes the other.
Julie Palachowicz-Carr, thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. Next Friday, January 3rd, we are expecting Maryland House of Delegates Majority Leader David Moon and the Chair of the Environment and Transportation Committee, Mark Corman. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's Political Science Program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band that straddles Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synth, Ben Heath on guitar and synth, and Montgomery County's own James Hedrick on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and is now available on Bandcamp. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. Happy New Year. See you in 2025.
I'll be wearing my hair shirt.